All right, and our next speaker is Manny Papou, colorectal surgeon from Memorial Sloan Kettering, and he'll be talking about anorectal diseases in our cancer patients.
Great, okay. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk. I will present some common cases of anorectal abscesses, fistula, and pain, and hopefully this will generate a good discussion at the end of our session. I have no relevant disclosures. First case is a 68-year-old man with myelodysplastic syndrome. He has been on chemotherapy and he presented in the ER with neutropenic fevers. His absolute neutrophil count was 800. His platelets were 95. He had perineal discomfort. On external examination, there's no flactions and erythema. And of course, as you can expect, the CT or MRI was performed. Actually, this was an MRI in the ER, which demonstrated a 1.5 centimeter intersphincteric abscess. This is the finding. So intersphincteric abscesses, this patient was started on Zosyn. He was taken to the OR for EUA anoscopy and internal drainage of the abscess with placement of a 14 French mushroom tip catheter. And this is just to summarize the management of intersphincteric abscesses. These are abscesses that take place in the intersphincteric space, the one shown in the arrow. People who see abscesses as a continuum of a disease think that the intersphincteric abscess is the early stage of all abscesses. They all start from anal glands, which are on the posterior side of the anal canal at the area of the anal crypts. And first they develop in the intersphincteric space. The common scenarios like this one, you cannot see anything externally, but if you do an internal rectal exam, you can feel a bulge, and sometimes you can see purulence. And these are drained internally, meaning you do an anoscopy, you make a small vertical incision in the rectal wall, and you place a mushroom catheter in. In this case, we'll let the patient continue through his chemotherapy. We were doing examinations every 2 weeks, exchanging the catheter, cleaning the cavity, and once his white count recovered and he finished his chemotherapy, we removed the tube with resolution of the abscess. So in general, about anorectal infections in the cancer patient, the incidence is 10 to 20 times higher than the general population, 5 to 10%, and the mortality can be up to 60% when untreated. The neutropenia is the major risk factor. And the first line of therapy really is antibiotics. Contrary to the general management of people who have an abscess and are immunocompetent, the reason for that is sometimes they heal on their own. But moreover, sometimes an EUA in these people who are neutropenic can be very ungratifying. You find just induration and erythema without abscess. Definitely patients with higher neutrophil counts who have an abscess, they do require an IND. And if you see any signs that are suspicious, flactions, erythema, purulence, they definitely need an operative intervention. So it's definitely safe to do an IND, but sometimes if their neutrophil counts are very low, it's safe to discuss this with your medical oncologist, try G-CSF, wait until they evolve an abscess, and take them later on to the operating room. In terms of the classification and overview of the anorectal abscesses, as you know, we're still using Dr. Parks' classification. Intersphincteric abscesses, which we just discussed, are drained internally. They're not so common. They present 5 to 10% of the cases. Perianal and ischioanal or ischiorectal abscesses are the more commonly seen abscesses. Those are drained externally. The perianal ones you can probably drain in the ER. Ischioanals, I prefer to drain all of them actually in the OR, not in an emergency department. We talked about the intersphincteric, which require internal drainage, and supralevator abscesses, usually they arise from abdominal or pelvic processes, like pelvic abscesses from appendicitis or diverticulitis. Those are ideally drained transabdominally, but if you can't, the second route is through the rectum. What you do not want to do is drain them through the skin, then you create a fistula, what we call an extrasynthetic fistula between the peritoneum, essentially, and the skin. And it's always important to remember with any drainage of the abscess that even if you don't find the fistula tract at the time of the drainage, that up to 50% of them can evolve into a fistula, so you have to prepare the patient and counsel them appropriately that they may need repeated procedures. Second case is a 57-year-old man with locally advanced rectal cancer. He was treated per our standard protocol with neoadjuvant chemotherapy and long-course chemoradiation. He reported more than 1 week of increasing anal pain, and he had an MRI which showed a large perirectal abscess with a transphincteric fistula in the left anterior position. This is the MRI. I don't know if you can see well the left anterior abscess and the associated fistula. This patient had a horseshoe abscess, and the management of that is definitely an operative intervention, drainage of the abscess and sedum placement. My general principles in this case is I try to do radial incisions because you want to follow Langer's lines and avoid nerve injury to the skin. They can be small. You don't have to do big skin incisions. You can do them at the area of maximal flexions or as close to the anus to prevent future formation of long fistula tracts. If you have big spaces, you can place quarter-inch Penrose drains or Mallicot catheters to drain the subcutaneous space. Sometimes you need to create counter incisions to facilitate maximum drainage. And I always check for with hydrogen peroxide to identify and drain fistulas. I also very commonly, that's my personal preference, take tissue to make sure these are not malignant fistulas. And their overall management is further down. You can downsize the Penrose drains to smaller setons, and eventually, my preference is to remove the drains from the ischioanal space, but leave the drain or seton that drains the fistula, and we deal with that after they have recovered with their chemo. This is the only gross pictures I will show you, and I'm sorry, I know it's many of you have had just lunch. This is this case exactly. This patient had multiple incisions. The ischioanal space was essentially involved almost in a 360 fashion. The seton, the white seton that you see at 2 o'clock, I like that because the incision is small and it's radial. It's draining the fistula. The other ones are just draining the space. And as you can see, the person who had performed the procedure had placed mushroom catheters in those. Later, those mushroom catheters were removed. This specific patient had an LAR with a loop ileostomy, and afterwards he had two of the sedums removed, and the left anterior 2 o'clock position was taken away last, as far as I know. And he's healing well. That's what I've heard. Third case is a 39-year-old woman with multiple myeloma. She has been on carfilzomib, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone. She developed an ischiorectal abscess and an associated fistula in anal. We had her ischiorectal abscess drained. We had sent tissue from her transvicteric fistula to pathology. It was benign. A seton was placed. She had finished her chemotherapy, and similarly to patients with benign anorectal fistulas, after she had finished her treatment, she came back for a lift procedure. And again, in terms of anorectal fistulas in the cancer patient, it's always important to remember that 25 to 50% of abscess drains will evolve into fistulas. Draining setons are good for maintenance of the fistula while patients are on chemotherapy. And once they have finished, and if you're ready for a definitive treatment, you can perform a mucosal advancement flap, and or you can do them in combination with a lift procedure once they have healed and they have recovered. And it's always good to do flexible sigmoidoscopy to rule out proctitis or colitis. But I would say the go-to procedure is draining setons to make sure that they are maximally drained and they have no further sepsis while they're on chemotherapy. Some people do use cutting setons as an alternative. Their incontinence rates can be up to 12%. The principle for that is you cut the anoderm and you tighten those setons once a week. Usually in the office, you have to pull it with a hemostat, put a silk suture underneath, and wait for them to go through the muscle tissue, and hopefully the scar that will be created will be less traumatic than a fistulotomy. Fourth case, a 45-year-old man with follicular lymphoma on chemotherapy who was on therapeutic Coumadin for bilateral PEs. He had perianal dull pain from his hemorrhoids. He had life-threatening episodes of bright bleeding per rectum. He had a panendoscopy, which had shown only hemorrhoids as the source of his bleeding. He underwent injection sclerotherapy. This is our go-to procedure for hemorrhoids in cancer patients. The gist is try not to touch hemorrhoids in patients who are on chemotherapy. Luckily, 80 to 90% of patients with hemorrhoidal issues get better with conservative approaches, so you have to counsel them about toilet training, avoid straining, spending less than 3 minutes in the bathroom, use of a squatty potty, use of baby wipes, fiber, stool softeners, and warm sitz baths. In the case of bleeding, injection sclerotherapy is, for me, the end of the line. You can use phenol or sotradecol. What we have at our institution is SDS, sotradecol. It's sodium dodecyl sulfate. It's a sclerosing agent. It has been approved for injection sclerotherapy of sclerosing veins. But you can use that. You can use the 3%. You can use a black spinal needle. When you do your anoscopy, you insert the needle a few centimeters into this mucosa and submucosa, past the mucosa space. The bevel is looking down. You inject this sclerosing solution slowly, and you wait for a few minutes before you withdraw your needle. Ideally, you do not want to see any scar formation or blanching of the tissue or black discoloration of the tissue. This means that your injection is too superficial and you have caused an ulcer, which can cause later on life-threatening bleeding and or pain. Interestingly, in older series, transient bacteremia was reported in as high as 8% of these cases. So that's one of the few cases where I will give perioperative antibiotics when we do this in the operating room. Fifth case, a 36-year-old woman with breast cancer on neoadjuvant chemotherapy. She had a 2-month history of sharp perineal pain after defecation and intermittent bright red bleeding per rectum. Her physical examination showed a classic posterior midline chronic anal fissure. I'm not showing a picture, but you have all seen the chronic anal fissure with the hypertrophic anal papilla, the inflammatory changes in the sentinel distal skin tag. She underwent an EUA anoscopy and Botox injection with good resolution of her pain. And overall, in terms of anal fissures in the cancer patient, the healing of chronic anal fissures is low. And I just want to highlight how GI side effects of chemotherapy can be very debilitating and sometimes overlooked in cancer management. Chemotherapy-induced constipation can be as high as 20%, chemotherapy-induced diarrhea as high as 80%, and it can have long-lasting effects. And the healing rate with Botox is 60 to 75%. We use 100 units. Mix them with 10 cc's of normal saline. It's important to know that the Botox toxin is a high molecular weight protein, has 150 kilodaltons, so when you mix it, don't shake it. I inject 60 units directly into the muscle that is exposed and 10 units on the other quadrants. Patients have very good results. It results in relaxation in 2 to 4 days and can last for 3 to 4 months, and you can repeat the procedures sometimes. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to take any questions at the end of the session.